My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, our show about Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and El Camino.
And this week we are talking about the episode Nacho, which was written by Thomas Schnauz, directed by Terry McDonough, and originally aired on February 16th of 2015.
And we're talking about the food nacho, which I think is pretty okay.
It's, you know, it's a good sometimes food, you know?
Yeah. I think having a really strong opinion about nachos is kind of wild. You know, like they show up, it's a good, you know, but just being like, I fucking love nachos.
Yeah.
Give me nachos. Like that's wild to me.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Sometimes I will make some nachos at home if I'm going out to get a beverage with my brother. Sometimes we'll go to a Mexican place and split a plate of nachos. You know,
yeah, it's nice.
It's good. I can't imagine being overly enthusiastic about chips, cheese, possibly meat, beans, jalapenos, you know.
All those things separately I get.
Yeah.
As a thing. It's also weird that nachos are a gas station staple.
You know, like, it is one of the hardest foods to eat in a moving vehicle.
Yeah. Hot cheese. You know, hot cheese and hot pursuits.
Yeah.
The gas station nacho story.
I understand why Taco Bell has a drive-thru, you know, but also the idea of eating Taco Bell while driving is psychotic to me.
Yeah. This episode, better than the last one, I think. This picks up right after Jimmy has learned from Nacho Varga that he plans to burglarize the Kettleman household to steal that money that they embezzled.
Yeah. And we get to see Jimmy kind of torn between his conscience about, you know, possibly sicking this criminal on this, white collar criminal family. And his desire not to be killed by the cartel, because remember, Nacho said, you know, you rat, you die.
Yes. Yeah. A real classic. We didn't do it. You know, Breaking Bad kind of thing.
Yeah.
This episode, we get a little bit more Mike, which I like. They start interfacing more than just kind of like a cameo that he calls a bridge troll, which I enjoy. we're kind of out of that premiere. We're in one of the things that makes this is a good point you have here in the notes. One of the things that makes season one feel weird is there aren't really B plots so much. Yeah. We're kind of on the greased Kettleman rail for a while.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah. It's not until the episode 5-0 that we start branching into different viewpoint characters. Yeah. Getting Mike stuff. So I lost the game we play, where we're just, you finish an episode and then you resist the urge to continue.
Oh yeah. You mentioned this last time. Did you watch through the series twice since last time you recorded?
No, I can't. I didn't lap myself. I'm in the middle of season four right now. But you know, I'm happy that I did that just so I have perspective on the series. And it takes a while for them to start doing nacho stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't know. Again, last episode we drew a parallel to Jesse.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were going to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm glad they found something to do with him. He's great.
Yeah. But yeah, not having B plots does make this feel very strangely paced.
Yeah. First season, super strangely paced.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it. We start out with a classic Breaking Bad trope here, a teaser that is a flashback.
Yes.
We have young Chuck. He's leaving his belongings with the jailer. You know, and there's a little bit of misdirection here. At first, looks like somebody who's grounding themselves.
Yes.
You know. There, but we see it's a very old cell phone,
you
know, and he is visiting Jimmy in jail.
Yeah.
They're in Cicero area. They're in Chicago.
Yeah. This is supposed to be Cook County lockup. They're both younger. Chuck has a full head of hair here, and Jimmy has like a ridiculous mullet looking, looking dude.
Looks like a Mr. Show character.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, this is a classic. You get the sense that this is a dynamic they've had before.
Yes.
Chuck is sick of Jimmy's jokes. You know, this is very serious. Jimmy faces being labeled as a sex offender.
Yeah.
Here, you know, this Jimmy calls this as trumped up is just a simple Chicago sunroof, which we'll learn about in detail later.
We don't learn about that till the last episode. And so it's just kind of dangling out there what a Chicago sunroof is.
Yeah, that can involve sex offense.
Uh-huh.
It's shitting in a car.
Yes.
I'm from the Chicagoland area. I don't think this is actually a thing.
Never heard about that. No. Euphemism. Yeah, no, I'm going to go to Urban Dictionary. Yeah, and see, it's a classic formula.
Instead,
it's a classic formulation. The idea of like what an Oklahoma Cleveland car wash.
Yeah, Oklahoma car wash. Any of those things.
Yeah.
A lot of times for like sex moves. This is not a sex move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is just, you know, public
poop. Yeah, it's just vandalism. Let's see if we have anything on this that
predates Better Call Saul.
That predates Better Call Saul. So that one's from 2018. No, the only one, there's one from 2006 that begins with the clause, when after receiving a hand job, and I'm not going to read the rest of it.
Is it after receiving a hand job, you go and poop in a car with an open top?
You know what? I read the rest of it, and that's exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. The hand job is just to make you nice and relaxed for the Chicago sunroofing. Yep. Jimmy, at this point, started working Chuck. You know, listen, I know you got legal magic and loopholes you can use. And mm-hmm. Chuck is, again, all business. Like, I haven't seen you for 5 years. You didn't even call me. You called mom. You called mom to get me out here. Mm-hmm. You know, she says you cried on the phone. He's like, I didn't cry. You know, she hears what she wants to hear.
Yeah.
And Jimmy starts kind of coming clean a little bit. Like, he's like, listen, mm-hmm. I know I'm a screw up, but I'd like to turn things around.
Yeah.
Here, Chuck sees through this immediately, mm-hmm. you know, and just calls for the guard.
Yeah. And Jimmy begs, you know. Like, and Chuck is pretty serious about this, saying like, hey, everything you're involved in up to now, it's over. You know, like, I'm going to get you out. I'm not going to be made a fool of. Right.
Yep. Don't ruin my reputation based on me doing this.
Yeah. And we're going to find out what the conditions are. This is pretty much right before Jimmy heads to Albuquerque to be under Chuck's thumb. I love the detail about the, you know, oh, you called mom and cried to her kind of thing, because that is spooled out, I think, so well over the course of the first three seasons. Like the fact that their relationship, their differing relationships with their mom end up being this, you know, kind of like a wedge or point of tension between them.
Their parent stuff is really good.
Yeah.
And this takes us, you know, to the future, to the now. Jimmy's making himself a cucumber water and vodka. Classic.
the face he makes when he sips it.
Yeah. Real, you got to drink something. guy's not doing well. He's looking at Nacho's number on the matchbook. He's thinking about it. And you think maybe he's going to call, but instead he calls Kim. Yeah. And again, we're getting these little hints into the nature of their relationship. She's surprised because it's the middle of the night, but not super shocked. Mm-hmm. You know, he has drunk dialed her before in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
This is usual.
She's, I'm not talking dirty to you. He was like, give me a little bit of credit, and you're not talking dirty to me either.
but then he goes, okay, bye. And she thinks that, you know, she knows that's a joke.
Yes.
You know, like that's not information that she gets a sense of humor.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
He invites her down. He's like, hey, you know, we're offering free pedicures and foot baths. Mm-hmm. And she's not going to do it. It's the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's like 2 a.m. or something. And he kind of awkwardly segues the conversation into the Kettleman's case. You know, talking about that, you know, that money, but also referring to like, oh, it's the your boss stole from me, right?
Yes.
You know, like, oh, the Kettleman's made a choice. You know, so did the Donner Party when they took that shortcut.
Yeah. It's not the most apt metaphor.
No.
And he says, you know, how much was it? You know, he knows how much it is, but he's just trying to basically
to lead her.
With this idea. Yeah, get her to come to the conclusion he's already come to.
Right.
You know, he's like, oh, you have that much money, you know, they've got to be careful or they might be in danger. And what an odd thing to say.
Yep.
You know, Kim's like, what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. And Jimmy goes, no, I didn't mean anything by it. Just theoretically, you know, but I'm drunk.
Yeah.
whenever anyone says I'm drunk. Uh-huh. After they say something like that, it's just like, oh shit.
You know? When you make that face, I'm joking.
Exactly. You know, it's a drunk face. He's like, uh-huh. I didn't mean anything. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And he hangs up and he says to himself, I'm no hero. You know, basically. Yeah. I don't love that line. I think it's a little weird.
It's
a little clumsy.
It's a little maudlin, I think. And not vodka and cucumber water maudlin.
No, It's the kind of thing you say to a person on vodka and cucumber water, not to yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And Jimmy can't sleep. He kind of is restless. So he gets up, he takes all of the paper towel off of a paper towel roll, gets some tissue paper and makes a little voice disguiser, and goes to a payphone in the middle of nowhere to call the Kettlemans.
Yes. He has to call a bunch of times. And mm-hmm. when he calls, we get the classic gag. They can't understand his voice.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually he says in his real voice, you know, Kettlemans, you're in danger. They're coming for your money. Bye.
Yes.
And this causes them to look out the window, and we see that Nacho is sitting in his van.
He's casing the joint.
Yeah. This is it's interesting, this episode, where it sets in not having different viewpoint characters, because if the viewpoint had expanded beyond Jimmy at this point, this wouldn't be a mystery.
No, no.
You know, this is a little bit Jimmy's, you know, experiencing the mystery, and we are as well. If we had been let into Nacho's world, we know definitively he hadn't done it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have no basis for how careful Nacho is. We know he's not a Tuco, right?
Yeah. Yep. So Jimmy's at work. He's bargaining with Oakley in the bathroom while Oakley's taking a shit. Couldn't be me.
Nope.
And Oakley's turning him down, you know, and he's like, the guy got drunk and drove into a shopping center and killed three people. And Jimmy goes, no, I'm talking about the liquor store assault. And he's like, oh shit, you know, start over. Jimmy refuses, you know, no, we're not starting over. Fucking take the deal.
what a basis for determining somebody's sentence.
Yes. Yeah. Fucking, a joke.
Yeah.
Kim calls and says like, wait, what did you mean last night? Mm-hmm. You know, and Jimmy can hear in her voice. Like something's wrong. You know, Kim, why are you asking me this? And he has to rush to her location.
Mm-hmm. And he's in such a hurry that he does not do the entirely routine and predictable thing and get the stickers so he can get past Mike. Yes. Mike stops him saying, hey, I didn't make the rules. These are just the rules.
Yeah. He says, you know, you're really doing something to me. And Mike says, I'm not doing anything to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, classic Mike.
Yeah.
He ends up cheating. He reaches over and lifts the arm and then says, screw you, geezer, as he peels out. really probably hoping people saw it.
Yeah.
He shows up at the Kettleman house and the police are all over it. You know, he and the audience thinking the worst possible thing. Howard and Kim are there, and it turns out there was a home invasion and the Kettlemans are missing.
Right. Place has been ransacked. Yeah. And Kim, you know, again, what an odd thing to say. And we don't know too much about her opinion of Jimmy at this point, or how much she knows about his ne'er-do-well past.
Yes.
You know, but she's like, hey, listen, the same night you warned me that this happens, you know, that this could happen, or it's a worry of yours, it happens, right?
Yep. Suspicious. You know, he says that Ripley's basically, you know, it's a big coincidence, Ripley's, believe it or not. And she starts plying him. The kids are missing.
Yeah.
You know, like this is serious. I got the sense from this that she does understand a little bit of his grift, because she's trying to express to him that this is more serious than a normal grift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we get flashbacks where they grift together as well.
I don't know about flashbacks of them grifting together. It's when they do the Victor and Gazelle thing, it kind of seems like they're doing it for the first time.
Okay. For some reason, I read that as a flashback, but I have not cheated on our podcast or with my podcast partner and watched ahead. So I don't know.
You didn't cheat at that game. You didn't know we were playing.
Exactly. Well, I'll look back in a couple of years, the right way.
Yeah.
With my moral victory.
So I guess I was saying, it's not that I don't think that she knows. It's just that we, as the viewer, do not know.
Yeah.
Specifically. Yeah. At this point. Right.
So he, at this point, he walks away, he goes to a payphone and calls Nacho's number, leaving a bunch of voicemails, because basically saying, hey, that thing we talked about, I don't know what's going on with it, but you should call me back.
And he just keeps calling. This goes on for so long.
Yeah. Yep. Until, you know, he leaves the phone number that he's been on. He goes to leave, and his car won't start. So he notices two suspicious guys approaching him from the front and back, starts leaving on foot. They chase him, and turns out these are cops.
Yeah. It's like, it's his lawyer. This is who's been calling.
And so Saul gets taken to Nacho in lockup, in the interrogation room. I love Nacho's performance here.
Mm-hmm.
I love the silent treatment for the whole beginning part of this, just letting Jimmy talk.
Uh-huh.
You know? He says, basically, he does the same thing he did with Tuco. Let me make an educated guess. Yes. That's what the police told me. A neighbor spotted your van, wrote on the license plate. The cops tracked you, found blood on the floor of the van.
Yeah.
You know? And Nacho is just, again, being quiet.
Yeah. Yep. Jimmy says, yeah, well, this is federal. The FBI is coming in. This is going to be very bad news for you. My advice is confess to everything. I feel very good about knocking your sentence down to the minimum, 18 years.
Yeah, they take this good behavior stuff seriously, but they need to know the kids are okay.
Yes.
You know, and just totally out of his depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Nacho kind of brings him back down to earth here. You know, you miserable piece of shit. You set me up. You gave my score to another crew, and now you're setting me up.
Yeah, I didn't do anything. I was there. You know, mm-hmm. I was casing the place, but they were fine when I left and I never went into the house. And that blood, the only reason why that blood is there has to do with you. Mm-hmm. It's the skater kids. It's the Kratos skaters. And Nacho slams his fist on the table to scare him, saying, listen, the cops are poking my business. If they find anything, you are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my counteroffer to 18 years. You have until the end of the day to get me out.
Yeah.
I love this hinting at Nacho going behind Tuco's back with shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this being not being able to him not being totally loyal to the Salamancas is a wedge later that Gus is going to use against him.
Yes.
He's been keeping secrets,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's neat that it kind of begins here. He doesn't just want people not to look into his business because it would get him in trouble, but mm-hmm. also his business includes things like this that Tuco probably weren't on board with.
Yeah.
Was not on board with.
Tuco would want a piece of it, right?
Yeah. If you told Tuco about this, those kids would be dead. Dead, mm-hmm. dead. They would be spiked like footballs.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, he would take a mallet and pound them into the ground like a railroad spike. Nothing. Yep.
He'd vivitch them. He would mm-hmm. grease up a broom and fly away with their baby fat. Kim is waiting for Jimmy leaves the room. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, it's surprising you're representing the lead suspect.
Uh-huh. Like you said you didn't know anything, and here you are. Right. Yeah.
And she kind of explained, you know, listen, you don't have to stand behind attorney client privilege. Somebody's in danger mm-hmm. here. As he starts saying Nacho didn't do it. And he's like, no, Nacho didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, get CSI down here, test the blood in the van. And the Blowjob brothers are like, that's going to take too long.
the detectives.
Yes. Yeah. It's not quite the same Blowjob brothers from Breaking Bad, but it's a new set of Blowjob brothers.
Yeah. It's not the feds. It's the local Blowjob brothers. Yes. 104.
There's a local branch. It's a franchise.
Yeah.
You get two cop guys, one of which his shirt is kind of partly undone.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wherever two or more of you gather in mind.
Yeah. he starts putting on the show, you know, to Nacho being like, you better let him out. He's an innocent man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just so Nacho can hear. And then he says, let me see the crime scene.
Yeah.
You know, and Kim says, okay, let's do it. You know, and the cop's like, why? He was like, yeah, why?
And why Jimmy says, yeah, why?
Yeah. Why are you agreeing with me? It's because Kim wants to apply him morally.
Yes. Yeah. And so they go and look, and you can even tell looking at it, it's a bunch of stuff that is, you know, was in drawers, kind of, you know, turned out, but there was no electronics missing. Like they have the big living room there. The TV is still there.
Yeah. Right? Tossed, but not robbed.
Yes.
You know, and Kim just keeps dropping details about the kids, mm-hmm. you know, just being like, Jimmy, you know, if this is one of your ordinary things, this is different.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's little Rutiger. It's, you know, 12.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's Jojo, 7.
Yeah. And this works. He's very upset. You know, he says, you want me to crack, mission accomplished. He's going to tell her everything at this point. But first he notices something. He sees that there's a doll in all the photos mm-hmm. of Jojo. And the doll is gone.
Yeah.
You know, that means the kid wasn't dragged out of the house. And he says, this is like kind of a leap.
Yeah.
You know, he says, maybe the Kettlemans kidnapped themselves.
Yeah.
You know they can't run. They would look guilty. The cops say, what if the bad guy was threatening the girl and they gave the doll to her to shut up? That seems pretty plausible to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his thing only makes any sense because he knows the truth, but he can't reveal it. You know, it's cool dramatic irony here.
Yes. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of dueling. Isn't that possible? Right.
Yes.
This is, you know, this is him solving backwards, but it's also him under, like, he's met the Kettlemans. He knows how scammers think, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so he takes Kim outside and says, listen, I'm the one who called the Kettlemans. Mm-hmm. You know, I basically, he's like, she says, how do you know? He's like, well, I deduced it.
Yes, from a conversation that he had with Nacho. Yeah.
Yeah. She says, you didn't use the sex robot voice, did you? Very funny to try to do dirty talk like the Sergeant Hatred interrogating Dr. Yeah. Venture.
Yes.
With the mask.
Talking with a kazoo in his mouth, doing the sex robot voice. Where did he come from?
Yeah, I had no idea what their sex robot play would be. And he says, listen, I need to get Nacho out or they're going to turn me into a meat pinata. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
You know, Kim says, you know, we should let people know. He's like, no, I'll fucking die. Mm-hmm. He says, Kim says back, listen, you know, he suggests to Kim that they get Howard to back off on this and start investigating where the Kettlemans are. Mm-hmm. And she says, he'll never do that. That would incriminate our clients.
Yeah, basically, like, go with my theory. Get Howard to go with my theory, but that is based on the premise that the Kettlemans did take the money. We can't do anything against their interests.
Yeah. So Jimmy heads back to the courthouse, and Mike won't let him park. Listen, you're going to have to find somewhere else to park.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, who's under a lot of stress and time, you know, a time limit here, freaks out. Says, "Listen, you know, I'm just going to park right here." Mm-hmm. And he gets out, he starts, you know, making a big show to push past Mike. And then Mike, you know, he says, oh, you're going to gum me to death. And then Mike gets him in an arm lock. He gets an ow, 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 as he's pushing him down on the ground. He
keeps on yelling about his bad knees.
Yes. He loves his bad knees.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's his favorite thing. He won't stop talking about them. Yeah. And, you know, this just throws trouble on top of trouble. You know, Mike is inside talking with the two detectives about the case. And they seem really comfortable asking him to do something for the cops, you know, trying to get him to put pressure on Jimmy with an assault charge, you know, saying, let's do some good. The way that Mike scowls at that.
Yeah. He does not like that.
No.
They go to Jimmy and they're being real smarmy about this. Jimmy keeps reiterating, no, the Kettlemans took themselves. And you see Mike, he gets a little light bulb. Flash. Mm-hmm. He says, you know what, I've decided not to press charges. I love all of this bit, you know. Mm-hmm. The detectives are furious at this. You know, so what, you get a chance to do the right thing and you puss out? Yeah, I guess. That's on me.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of walking away.
Yeah. We're gonna find out in a couple of episodes, you know, some of the reasons why Mike has a bad view of law enforcement.
Yeah, bad view of law enforcement, and specifically this kind of like gamesmanship in it, you know, this kind of work in the system, working people against each other.
Yeah.
It's like, if it were just Jimmy getting in trouble for assault, mm-hmm. I feel like he would not necessarily, you know, one, he believes Jimmy, we'll talk about that. But the other thing is, it was just Jimmy getting in trouble for the thing he did. Those are the rules. Mike gets mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
It's this whole like leverage this.
The buddy, the buddy partners, you know, doing stuff just slightly outside the lines. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sees himself in it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jimmy kind of chases after Mike and gets in front of him, you know, saying, I refuse to believe you have something resembling a heart inside your body. You know, why did you take it easy on me? And for the first time today, somebody tells Jimmy that he believes him. Mike heard the story and agrees.
Yep. It says the details make sense.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy says, well, what about their cars? They didn't take their cars. And he goes, odds are they didn't even get out of their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Says, but, you know, back when he was a cop, he had a case involving a bookie who skipped town after the Super Bowl. They spent a long time searching for him, but he was just a couple houses down in a building that was being renovated.
Yeah.
Just hunkered down. You know, mm-hmm. it says human nature to want to stay close to home. Nobody wants to leave home.
Yeah.
It's like, preach. I never want to leave home.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. You know, the fact that this episode is not bookended, but like begins in an interrogation room and then, you know, has this too. I don't know, little echoes across it. So this Jimmy believes this, and he goes back to the Kettleman house looking for anything, right? He is searching for crumbs here, and he notices some window decals on their car, those little stick figures showing the family hiking and camping.
Yep. and he notices out of their backyard, you can make your way out into the wilderness here. Yep. So we get this really long montage. Again, I think the montages in this show are too long, of him searching.
Yes.
Basically all day until nightfall.
Yeah. Just kind of following a trail up into the mountains, up into the Sandias. And he stops when he hears torture by campfire song.
Yeah. Here's people singing bingo. It's the Kettleman's having a grand old time.
Yeah.
Here. I love how bored the kids are. The kids do not want to be doing this.
No. Nope.
You know, another Kettleman family chant or whatever.
How about one more before we go to bed?
Yeah, I'm feeling John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
I've never felt anything less in the world, Craig.
I don't know what feeling John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt is, like as an emotion.
I still have Urban Dictionary open. Want me to check?
Yeah, I guess that's the Chicago sunroof where you take a John Jingleheimer shit. He calls Kim, you know, holds up the phone, says, listen, your clients are okay. Maybe at the house in a couple hours. And he lets himself in, basically. Yeah. You know, opens the thing, says, here's Johnny, the same thing from the beginning of the episode when Chuck came in. Uh-huh. And says, listen, kids, pack up your stuff. Uncle, you know, bury your scat. Uncle Jimmy's going to take you home.
Civilization awaits. And then and the son, the 12-year-old, finally.
Yeah, finally. Jimmy grabs the bag to try to help them, and Betsy wrestles with it.
Yeah. You know,
until it's a ripaway bag, it rips in the middle, and all the money spills out.
Mm-hmm. And Jimmy just goes, yeah, they're caught dead to rights.
Yep. He knew that they had it. He knew that they had done it. But the twist, or, you know, the kind of final note here is he's confronted with this much money. This is going to play into the next episode where he gets bribed.
Yes.
You know, everybody thinks they can, you know, resist any kind of money until you see it, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe the idea here.
Yeah.
So,
you know, ending on this, not really a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Just like, we know from the Kettlemans, right? They're on loan from the Farrelly Brothers, the Coen Brothers collection.
Yes. Yeah. And the Farrelly Brothers cut's very different.
Yes.
For the Kettlemans.
Yeah.
It's mostly about them coming in each other's hair.
Yeah.
There's a lot of spray back and forth, but. And there are kids, so we don't want that. Good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Slow paced, like not a whole, it doesn't feel like a whole episode's worth of stuff happens in all these episodes because of that lack of B plot.
Yeah.
And because we are on like this kind of linear track through this. Like there's a lot of going back and forth.
Right.
That happens in this.
It is a little bit like an adventure game. We're doing some LA Noir, Phoenix Wright stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, like at one point he just decides to go back to the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
In a straight up, like, what if something else got unlocked there?
Yeah. You know? Just, oh man, maybe there'll be a new NPC waiting there because I found this comb.
Exactly. And literally what happens, he gets in the altercation with Mike, which then gives him the necessary clue. Like, it's very adventure gamey.
Yeah.
You know, presumably he was going back to beg Nacho. But like it is just very, you know, coincidences are piling up. It's part of the kind of more elastic reality, kind of sillier reality of Better Call Saul, I feel like.
Yeah. I feel self-conscious about how short this episode is, but a lot of this is montage and like we don't have like continuity to like disentangle or, you know, talk about or a lot of character stuff.
No, I mean these episodes early on, it's been fun going back to this and kind of revisiting it close up because it's making me realize why my initial impressions of the show for the first season were a little bit negative.
Yeah.
Because it is very different. And part of it is going to have, you know, shorter episodes because fewer things happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we have the additional context for everything, you know, that is going to happen, just not a lot happens. We don't get a lot of character interaction. There's not a lot of subtext. To this, and we don't the things that we know about the characters down the road don't necessarily reflect on this as much as you might want. Like, yes, we can ask about whether, you know, Kim knows about Jimmy's shady dealings. We can ask about whether, you know, this is Nacho pulling something on Artuco. We don't know that yet, but once we know it, nothing really happens. It's just like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, they're kind of, you can read this, it's here if you want to look for it. This is a hint at that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just, it's not a whole lot happens. It could have used fucking kill that montage and throw a Chuck scene in there.
Yeah, please.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Eliminate all the montages from this show.
Get rid of it. I do not want to, you know, infer a third thing by seeing two things put next to each other.
No. Yeah. Not just the montage as the set piece, uh-huh. but the technique.
Yes.
Yeah. Really, I just want the set piece. If I know that Jimmy's looking, you could have accomplished that by cutting to Nightfall.
Yeah.
You know.
You could have found another place to put that good song, Find Out What's Happening. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or not. I would have given up the song to have a better paced episode.
True.
Yeah, that's going to be it. What can people do if they like this show?
If people like the show, they can support us. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. There, kick us some money and get a lot of bonus content. And also just help us keep doing the shows.
Yeah, keeps the lights on. This is something that I don't mention all the time. But sometimes people leave us mean reviews because of politics stuff.
Yes.
So if you haven't reviewed us before, and sometimes people leave us mean reviews because they don't like us, and that's fine.
Yeah.
If you haven't left us a review though, drown that shit out. Like if you genuinely like us, let the things know, let the algorithms know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Push that stuff further down the line. Cause I don't know. Feels a little unfair.
Yeah. Like hate me for my flaws.
Yeah, please.
You know, don't just leave a review that just says like 3 out of 5 pronouns. And then the body of the review is pronouns. What? Like that is very funny. It made me laugh, but it's not, that's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Braver person than me going and looking at those reviews. Shit.
I don't know what was going through my head.
Yeah.
But it did. Yeah. We did get some treasure that we might dip into in the next episode. So it's it's all worthwhile.
Okay.
All right. The next episode we record. We're recording After Suffering after this.
Yeah.
Not the next episode of Better Call Saul. Anywho, yeah. Anyway. Also join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen. A big shout out to our the artists behind our new show art. I want to mention them, Zilla, Z-I-L-L-A-H.
Yeah. And don't leave home until next time.
Yeah, just stick around. Wait for further instruction.